of the Talk on 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice. And now your host, the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith.
I am the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith, and this is Rogue Talk for July 13th, 2018, Friday the 13th. And my day's actually gone pretty good, so I'm not going to complain about Friday the 13th as of yet. But we got a great show planned for you today. I missed the last couple of weeks. That's how summer goes when you're in the landscape business. Sometimes, unfortunately, my paying job has to take precedence over my volunteer work. So didn't get to get on the air the last couple of weeks, but I'm super excited to get back. And one of the reasons I'm back in the seat today, I have a new intern, and you're going to get to meet him in the next few weeks. He is very interested in radio work. He loves sports. His name is Hunter. He just graduated from Hidden Valley High School, and Hunter's sitting with us today. We're not going to get him on air yet today, but you're going to get to meet Hunter very soon, and he's going to be helping me all summer long, and I'm super excited to have him here. He's having a good time so far, and so am I, getting to know him. And so I'm looking forward to everything he's going to do with us. He's going to probably end his term with me by covering some high school football at Rogue River. So we're really looking forward to that. So I hope you'll tune in every week. He's going to help me write stories. He's going to do a promo for Rogue Talk that we're going to play on the station. So we got a lot of fun stuff planned for Hunter. So I'm happy to have Hunter here with me today. And he'll be with me all summer long. And we are going to change the format just a little bit today. I've got a special guest in the studio, and so we'll do the news at the end of the show, and so that'll be the cue for most of you to turn it off because, you know how well I editorialize the news. But joining me in the studio, someone that has been on the show a couple of times before, but she was recently on another local station talking about something that I'm very interested in, and I wanted to get her to talk about that. And of course, this is Julie Niles Fry. Julie is the Director of Career Development and Marketing at Logos Charter Public Charter School. She's also a former school board member at the Rogue River School District. And she has a couple of her own shows on radio on the is it Bicoastal Media, Julie?
Mm-hmm.
Bicoastal Media. She does a show called Innovation in Education and Business. That's a Saturday show at noon on Saturdays on KMED. And she's also on Cool 103.5 from 12 to 4 on Sundays. So doing the hobbies that I like to do. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. And of course, Julie's famous for the Lost episode. She was one of my early guests when I first started the show. And unfortunately, when we went to load the show on the website, because of course all of our shows are available for streaming or download, hers is not there. Well, at least not the first time. She's been on since then, but that one got lost in the computer wasteland, and so we're having her on again. So hopefully this one's getting recorded.
Good enough.
So Julie, you were talking to Bill Meyer on KMED, mm-hmm. and you guys were talking about some of the problems in education, and you didn't get real deep into it. It was kind of a brief interview, but I wanted to get you on here to kind of go into some of the things that you think are really what I would call some of the structural problems with our public education system. And mm-hmm. let me give you kind of a summary of what I see, what I think is kind of one of the big systemic problems. And I'll let you kind of take it from there. My problem with the public education system is I think it's very dysfunctional, and here's why. You have several groups that are all supposed to be accomplishing the same goal, which is educating students, but they all have their own interests and their own responsibilities that don't always end up allowing them to pull in the same direction. And here's what I'm talking about. You have the teachers who are by far mostly all very dedicated, very wonderful individuals. There's always a few bad apples, of course. You have that with any profession.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all really good people, and they're very dedicated to their craft. But they're in a union, And the union has certain objectives and certain things that they want to achieve. Mm-hmm. Then you have the classified employees, which is your other employees at the school, including janitors and aides and teachers' assistants and whatever. You have all of these secretaries, all of that. They have their own union, which mm-hmm. has their own set of goals and things they want to achieve for their members. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, with the teachers union, you get a little more, they get a little more involved in politics and things like that. And of course, we've had a Supreme Court decision affecting those kinds of unions, mm-hmm. and we won't necessarily get into that today. But then the classified union, I don't think they're too much into the politics. They're really just trying to get the best thing for their members. But I would imagine they're probably into some politics, too. Then you have the administration. You have the principals, the vice principals. I don't know if counselors fall under that, or maybe they're a classified. I don't know all of the details of that. Then, of course, you have the school, the district. You have the district office. Employees. You have the superintendent. Mm-hmm. You have his employees in his office, or his or her. It's a mm-hmm. his in Rogue River's case, but we're not here to talk about Rogue River specifically. And then you have the school board.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before I let you kind of knock down some of my ideas of you've got all these groups pulling in sometimes in separate directions, which is where that dysfunction, I think, comes from. But you mentioned something on the show yesterday that I found interesting, was that as a school board member, you weren't allowed to go into a classroom and observe the way that the teachers were teaching or what they were doing. Explain how that works to us, because I found that very interesting. And I'll give a shout out to Bill Meyer for asking that question. And of course, we know, you know, Bill's a great interviewer. But I found that interesting, that as a school board member, and you're a former school board member with the Rogue River District. And again, mm-hmm. I'm not making this about Rogue River. We're just
just
in general, the public school system. How does that work, and why is it that you aren't able to do that?
Well, as a school board member, you represent the constituency, the people who live within the district boundaries, and then you support the higher functioning and standards of the school district, right? So you want all students to succeed. That's your number one goal. Your number two goal is to set policy to ensure that that can happen. And number three is you represent your constituents. So a school board member is really at a policy level and works with this, has an employee that they hire called a superintendent, right? So a school board member does not have any authority over anybody else in the school district other than the superintendent, who we hire to do the job of managing. So when a school board member supposedly goes into classrooms, is on campus a lot, looking around, seeing how things are going, that is not appropriate authority-wise. So people, what that tells you is that employees get threatened, feel threatened, if they have somebody come look at them and watch them and engage with them who may be communicating to the big boss, who then will communicate to their boss, and then they would get in trouble. So the idea of a school board member is to ensure that you have policies in place that are going to enable students to do the best they can do and to represent the community members in their path in the school and being in the school. School board members supposedly are not there to ensure that practices are in place, specific practices are in place, or specific things I want to see. I'm not there for that.
So who is there for that?
Well, we're hoping that the parents, of course, are giving the teacher feedback and that they're working in collaboration with them. We're hoping that the assistant principal or the vice principal or the principal of the school is on the ball and doing their job to ensure that the teacher in the classroom is doing their job. We're hoping that also the superintendent is watching over his principals and ensuring that they're doing a good job. So the idea is that there is enough people watching that the teacher should be doing well. So,
okay, so that presents to me one of the problems I see. And the problem is the administration, the principals and the vice principals. They're stuck between two groups. If they lose the camaraderie or the trust of the teachers, it would be almost impossible for them to do their job.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't do the job that the superintendent would want them to do, which is, in a way, they also need to be monitoring the teachers, making sure there's not some problems going on that might go under the radar otherwise, that's a really hard job. You're kind of stuck between what can be two competing interests. It doesn't have to be, or it isn't always, I would imagine, but at times it has to be. There always has to be some sort of contention with the administrators in the middle of that contention. Now, in a well-working school system, that contention should be fairly light. It shouldn't be, you know, too bad. But let's be honest, things don't always go smoothly. Teachers go on strike. A district may hire the wrong principal that doesn't know how to do the job, or gets along well with the teachers but isn't doing the job the superintendent would want. Is that something you see? I see where that's a major point of dysfunction in the public school system.
Well, I think if we were to compare it to business, let's say you have a business owner, you yourself, right? A landscape business owner. And let's say you have 20 employees. You guys are all working for the same thing. You want beautiful yards. You want happy customers. You want to make a good living. You want your reputation to be good. You're all working for the same thing, and you're the boss. You're paying them, right? And so you can ensure that things are done and they're done right, and that you're training these people to tell the story that you want them to and do the job you want them to. In the school district, it is not that way. So a school district obviously has a superintendent who hires the principals. Of course, many superintendents arrive and they've inherited the principals. So the superintendent is not always building the team that he wants to work with. He's navigating the team that has been chosen or is in existence. And the great percentage of that team is loyal to the union and is represented by the union. And they should be loyal to the union. If you're a union member, you should be loyal to your union, right? But if your guiding principles are provided by someone other than your employer, it's splitting you in half, right? Because you realize you owe something to the union because there's certain protocols that they have. And if you get in trouble, that's, you know, there's certain steps to that, recourse. And the union steps might be different than the district steps. It really doesn't work. That's in my mind. It just doesn't work.
Well, and I like the example you gave of the business, how a business would be run. If I'm running a business, and well, I do run a business, I don't have employees, but if I did, I can incentivize my employees, I can incentivize my managers, per se. Like, again, let's go to the example you gave, a landscape business.
Mm-hmm.
I want certain quality to be performed. I don't want corners cut on certain things. I want things done a certain way.
Yeah.
But if I can incentivize my employees that, hey, if we can deliver this level of quality, but maybe we can cut our labor costs by 10%. If you can find ways to get this done faster and more efficiently, the customer's happy. They're still getting the same level of work. But I'm happier because we're making more money. If I can incentivize that, hey, you guys are all going to get a bonus if we get, you know, whatever. And maybe my customers would have a form I would give them at the end of a job to give me feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if the feedback is good and the job got done and you save some time on the job, you're going to get a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that in the school system. There's no way to incentivize anything.
Nope.
Well,
in fact, that would be favoritism.
It would be. So let's go down the union, and I don't want to focus on teachers because I'm not blaming this on teachers or the unions, but let's go down that road just a little bit. The unions unfortunately, in my estimation, and tell me if I'm wrong, they've created a system where it's almost impossible to weed out the bad ones. And I mean bad ones. I don't necessarily mean, you know, well, I mean Rogue River recently, we had a music teacher that was arrested, and and now they were able to remove him fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. But I'm not necessarily talking about something maybe that extreme. But we have teachers that maybe they're apathetical. They're not really keeping up with what the right curriculum that should be taught. Maybe they're, you know, they've been doing it for a long time. Maybe they have tenure. I don't know how the unions, what they call that. It seems like it's really, really hard to police that or to do anything about that. And I'll give you an example. And I obviously won't say where this was. I've lived in different places, so this is not giving anything away. I knew of a teacher that had been moved from one school to another that was accused of some things that were not really good. And the only thing the district was really able to do, now he was retiring soon, and so they moved him to another school and never really actually dealt with the problem. Mm-hmm. Is that a systemic problem in the public school system? Because I'm afraid that it is.
Yes. The longer you're there, you know, remember that the teachers pay the union to represent them, and they have the right to that. So if something goes wrong, they also have the right to be defended by them and to have them as their arbitrator, whatever you'd call it, representative. And so that union's goal is, the union just has another goal too. Instead of just representing the teachers, they also need to sustain themselves. And so, you know, their goals are mixed, and they shouldn't be. They should be, you know, if you do something wrong in your job, you really ought to go. Or at a minimum, you ought to be written up, and there should be a protocol that, you know, this is your third write-up over the same incidents. And just like in a regular business, we can't save you. But the union does save people, and they save them regularly. And so when we talk about school boards differing from, you know, decade to decade to decade, oftentimes that can be why. You know, what has the administration done to ensure that they're keeping up on observations of teachers or staff, I should say. We just shouldn't pick on just the teachers, but staff. You know, what is that leadership doing to ensure that the school is the best that it can be? And that's the job of the superintendent, to make sure that those things get done at the lower levels. And so teachers have every right, or employees have every right, to utilize their union support. But you're absolutely right. The union is not only there for the teachers, they're certainly not there for the kids, but they are definitely there for themselves as well. And it can just make it miserable. It's taken, when I was on the board, you know, just history of teachers getting moved. Teachers, just like what you just said, you know, instead of dealing with the problem where it lay, you get on the board and you find out that so-and-so has been moved from school to school to school, etc.
Well, and the problem I had with this specific situation, and again, I'm not going to get into any of the specific details, but the conduct that was feared or that was alleged was inappropriate toward a student. And I'm not going to get any farther into that. And the teacher was moved to a middle school. And to me, that's the most appalling thing I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. Middle schoolers are the most vulnerable kids in the system. Mm-hmm. I was a middle schooler once. Your hormones are starting to kick in. The girls are a foot taller than the boys, so everybody's feeling very awkward. In fact, the girls that are good at sports are better than most of the boys at that point. It's a really awkward time. That is the last place a teacher who allegedly has had some
inappropriate
activity toward a student. And I'm not necessarily talking physical. I'm just talking inappropriate. And they moved them to a middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just the most ridiculous thing I've heard. And I can only blame the union for that because their hands are probably tied.
The school district's hands would be tied. The union is going to come in and they're going to manage that discussion. And they're going to say, this is the teacher's rights and this is our rights and this is what you will do. And the district must say, okay, we will do that. So this is where... my mom was a teacher for 40 years. She belonged to a union. She believes in them, but of course she would. They're for the teacher and they're for the employee and they ought to be. That's the way they're set up. But in today's society, even society in the last 20 years, we just, in my opinion, do not need a buffer zone between the worker and great outcomes.
Well, and I would think, even though if you're a teacher, the other teachers are your friends, and I get that. Mm-hmm. But I would think as a teacher, it would be in your best interest to get out the ones. It's like my business. I do landscape maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm driving around town and I see another landscape company and he's blowing like a barrel's worth of leaves out into the middle of the street because he's too lazy to pick them up.
Right.
That doesn't just reflect on him. That reflects on the whole business, the whole mm-hmm. industry. It makes us all look bad. Mm-hmm. And then you see things on social media. Oh, stupid landscapers always blowing the leaves into the street. Well, I don't blow the leaves into the street.
Right.
I may blow them to the street and pick them up, but I don't blow them out into the street. But when this other company's doing it, it makes us all look bad. I would think with the teachers, it would be in their best interest to weed out the ones that don't belong there. You know, there's other careers. Just because you went to school to be a teacher, if you're not cut out to be a teacher, it's time to go find another career.
Right.
So I want to get into this more, not so much focusing on the teachers, but I want to know if you think this can be fixed, and if so, how we can fix it, but we'll do that after the break.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona says President Trump must be willing to confront Russia's Vladimir Putin during their summit Monday in Helsinki. McCain says that if Trump is not prepared to hold Putin accountable, the summit should not take place. McCain's statement comes after the Justice Department announced charges Friday against 12 Russian intelligence officers accused of interfering in the 2016 presidential election by hacking into Democratic accounts. A Pakistani government official says the death toll from a suicide bombing at an election rally in the country's southwest has risen to 132. Provincial caretaker Home Minister Aga Umar Bongalzai says about 300 people were also wounded when the bomber targeted a rally for candidate Siraj Raizani, who was running for a seat in the provincial legislature. On Wall Street, the Dow by 95 points. More details at srnnews.com.
A radio station where community matters. 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN Sports, I'm Michael Harrington. Let's start with Major League Baseball Thursday in the National League. A three-run inning, enough for the Dodgers to edge the Padres.
The Los Angeles Dodgers moved into sole possession of first place in the National League West with a 3-2 victory over the San Diego Padres. Dodgers starter Ross Stripling threw six shutout innings, allowing just six hits to improve to 8-2. Stripling says he is just happy to escape without his best stuff.
Be happy about an outing like that because you feel like maybe you didn't have your best stuff, got a lot of things going your way, and you escape with 6-0s. Like, that's pretty cool. It doesn't happen every day, especially in the big leagues. So one to just kind of put behind me and chalk up as a mixture of good luck.
L.A. broke a scoreless tie off Padres starter Tyson Ross with a three-run seventh inning and held off the Padres as Kenley Jensen would pitch a scoreless ninth inning to record his National League leading 26th save. The Dodgers have won 8 of their last 11 games in the month of July. Philip Gaughan, San Diego.
Elsewhere, the Nats beat the Mets by a 5-4 score. This is SRN Sports. More baseball tallies for you here. Pittsburgh 6, Brewers 3. It was Colorado over Arizona 5-1. In the American League yesterday, the A's beat Houston 6-4. Same score, Boston over Toronto. The Yankees keep pace with a 7-4 win over the Indians. Minnesota 5, Tampa Bay 1. Angels down the Mariners 11-2. Interleague play, Philadelphia 5 and the Orioles 4. Tennis, Serena Williams has reached her 10th final at Wimbledon, 30th at all Grand Slam tournaments. Williams dominated much of her semifinal Thursday, beating 13th-seeded Julia Gerges of Germany 6-2, 6-4. At center court, she'll face another German 11th-seeded Angelique Kerber on Saturday, a rematch of the 2016 final at Wimbledon. NBA news, the Chicago Bulls have waived guard Sean Kilpatrick. Signed in late March, he averaged about 15 points in 9 games for Chicago after spending time with the Nets, Bucks, and Clippers last year. This is SRN Sports.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk, and we're talking to Julie Niles Fry, and we're talking about education. She's a bit of an expert in the field. A lot of her work has been around education, and including being a former school board member in the Rogue River District. But we're not talking about Rogue River necessarily today. We're getting into more the big functional problems with public education. But since I mentioned the Rogue River School District, you were a school board member, and let's talk about the school board just for a second, and then we're going to talk about the bigger picture and what we think maybe could fix the system. As a school board member, I remember when you were on the board, and there were some pretty important things going on at that time in the district, and things got very contentious. Is there a problem with the school board as a organization or as a structure? Do you see any problems with that part of the system, the school board? Is there too many limitations on what they can do? Is there enough diplomacy within the school board? How does that function?
Well, the school board is really I urge anybody to get on a school board. It is such an educational process. It's just fantastic to learn how things work and why the system works the way it does. And unfortunately, in my mind, why it should be dismantled. But to be a school board is to represent your community. And that I have never met a school board member who was not enthralled with the idea of bringing their energy and their ideas and conversation to the table to make improvements, right? There's nobody I've ever known that's gotten on a school board that just says, oh, you know, I want this place to go down, right? We're really looking
We should hope. Why would you run otherwise?
Yeah, exactly, right? So, you know, we really want to do great things. And then we go to our OSBA training. So all school board members are trained. And we learn a lot of interesting things there that you never thought you'd learn, like teacher negotiations. What does the union want? What do the teachers want? What does the school district want? How do we represent all of those things in a negotiation? You know, and you're not thinking of that when you're a new school board member. You're thinking, obviously, is probably more as an employee or a business person that, well, yeah, we're going to sit down and decide, you know, what needs to be done to get the job done, and then we'll negotiate based on that, right? Oh, it's not that simple. Because everybody supposedly wants something, and you have to acknowledge that. And so that's one facet of it. Another facet, of course, is just dealing with all the legislation that comes down, the unfunded mandates, unhappy staff, which when I got on the board, it had been decades of contentious negotiations. Oh, my goodness. For years. I mean, I guess it had never been different, you know? People say, oh, I don't even remember the last time that this wasn't an awful process, right? So, you know, when I got on the board, it was kind of reliving, I guess, some of the just continues on. Well, and that continues on, too, because you have the same people at the table, right? The same teachers and staff members from years and years and years. They've been on their the union negotiation team, and that's what they do. That's what they like to do. And so if you can't change it up at the table and you can't trust people to do the right thing, then you're going to end up with that contention. So, yeah. Yes. OSBA, great overview of what you're supposed to do as a school board member, but absolutely shocking when you're sitting there learning it going, I did not think I was signing up for this.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
Part of it was like that.
Yeah. And that's got to be a tough situation. You're in you're in battle sometimes with people that are your friends and your neighbors, but
yeah.
they're being represented by a union and they want mm-hmm. certain things. And again, none of this is designed to put down teachers. I love teachers.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're what they do when they're a good teacher, especially, is one of the toughest jobs. It mm-hmm. Kids are like, it's like herding cats. I mean, it's just trying to actually educate them. And then all of the other demands that we've put on them, we have a whole segment of our society that thinks you just dump your kids off at school and let the school raise them. Well, that's not the teacher's job. The teacher's job is to educate them.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, our system has become, we think they're supposed to take care of everything.
It's all inclusive. My mom was a teacher, I mentioned, for 40 years. And she said she will never forget the first day that a student, she taught third or fourth grade then. She always taught between third and sixth grade. And she'll never forget the first day when the student showed up at school with his luggage. And she said, what are you doing? And he goes, kid bursts out crying, I'm going to dad's tonight. And it was the first time that, divorce in the 80s was pretty prevalent, right?
Yeah.
And it was really kind of a mainstream thing at that point. It was starting to become mainstream, but, she'd never had that difficulty before. She had taught in Germany. She taught in the Philippines. She taught in Lake Washington School District until she retired. They just had like this, great environment for families and kids, and the parents came in and volunteered, and the kids would come to school, and then all of a sudden families started to break apart, and the parents were now having to work. And so now these kids were showing up with the burdens of home. And she said just, for the rest of her career, she got used to kids coming to school crying because they had left their favorite pair of pants that their mom had bought them over at the dad's house. And now mom's going to be upset because I don't have my pants or whatever. I mean, these are dramatic stories that happen in a classroom.
Yeah. And they know that mom and dad don't get along, so they're not going to be able to get the pants back.
This isn't just one kid. This could be, half of your class is having this type of anxiety. So yes, when I affectionately call it the yellow bus system, go ahead, just put those kids on the bus. They're going to come home at 3:30 or whatever, and they're going to be educated. They're going to be
disciplined. They're going to be fed.
Ready to work.
I mean, we got districts feeding three meals a day.
Three meals a day, and you can't get out of it either.
Yeah.
You can't just say no to that stuff. You have to adopt it. Those mandates that happen in education.
Okay. So now we're kind of moving toward the system being broken.
Yeah.
How broken is it? What's the solution? I have some ideas, but I think you're a little closer to it than I am. What do you think needs to happen?
Well, I think that if you have a school board that's representing the constituents' voice, opinions, a reasonable approach to improvements in the school, that your school board members ought to be able to engage with that school, with that district. Like you mentioned earlier, what do you do? You just stand outside the school and wonder what's really happening. What if your school board members could go in and help? What if they could create things? What if they could unify a movement with parents to help out, or introduction of different programs for kids that after school or something like that? I'm not saying it would happen, but I am saying that that latitude should be there so that your school board members can get an overall view of what's existing in the classroom. And then also that conversation on the side that always happens with parents and school board members. And there's a lot of those. As a school board member, you will spend traditionally a lot of time helping your constituents navigate this system. And I call it navigating. It's like a GPS. There is no easy button to push and tell you where you're going in a school district.
Sure. Now, do we need, and this is kind of what I see, do we need a little less involvement from the federal government and maybe even the state government? Excuse me, losing my voice today. It was hot yesterday.
And you were out in the sun.
Yes, I was. So the voice a little weak today. But you mentioned like the program, the three meal a day program. It's either take it or leave it, and they feel like they have to take it. Do we need that kind of coercion from the government?
Well, I guess it depends on your school board and your school district. Some things you're not going to turn down, but let's say it was this. So let's say, again, that could be a constituency vote where you say, okay, do you want to be, as a school district, do we want to be beholden to what comes because we are going to accept X, Y, or Z? And maybe you could just have a vote of parents, right? And they could say, nope, that's okay. But, you know, when it comes to free food and parents running late and, you know, they don't have time to grab lunch that day. And we tend to, I think the feds and the state tend to implement some policies that make it less rigorous on parents. And I think that's unfortunate because kids learn that, you know, wherever I go, I'm going to get free food. Now, if you work at Google, right, and you're an adult, they have a nice cafeteria there. And if you forget to eat breakfast in the morning, you can run in and grab something and they want you to be comfortable. But that's because they want you to work there all day and spend a good portion of your life there.
I get tired of the carrot and the stick stuff that goes on with the government interference where they say, well, if you want these extra funds, you got to do this. And, you know, they put the carrot out, go, you go get the carrot and we'll give you these extra funds. Right. That's no way to run the school system. It's no way to run a business. That's not it. Right. That's not a true incentive. That's coercion.
I agree. And I think a business owner, as an independent person, you have the right to say, nope, I don't want your loan. No, I don't want that in my business. In a school district, you really don't, do you? Because you have so many different mindsets that are there and so many different belief systems, etc., that you must serve all. Now, as a business owner, you can say, my business doesn't offer weed eating. Right? Yeah. Oh, you need a weed eater? Well, I'm sorry, that's not a service I provide?
Well, that's a perfect example because I've gotten to the point where I'm strictly a weekly maintenance company. That's all I do. I don't do cleanups. I do bark jobs and stuff like that only for my existing clientele. I don't do it for outside people.
Right.
And yes, I have those. I can make those choices.
We don't have those choices in a school district. We must provide for everybody who shows up. And whether that student is brilliant and needs a tag program, or maybe that student is struggling, or maybe that student came from foster care, or it doesn't matter. We have to be able to provide what's there, or we're supposed to be able to. Right. Many districts don't have counselors. They don't have, or if they do, it's just somebody who helps fill out class forms and make sure the kids are in the right class. But we don't offer students counseling anymore. We don't offer them career guidance. We don't offer them speech and debate anymore. We don't offer them programs that create a ability for a student to think. And like we were talking about earlier, critical thinking, you know, it's important. Don't tell them what to do or what to say or what have you, but tell them how to cultivate that whatever action it is they want.
Teach them how to get from A to B on their own. Don't show them the way. Show them how to find the way.
Right.
It's kind of the old, you know, teach a man to fish or, you know, give a man a fish. It's kind of a similar thing. You want them to take the reins and it would make a big difference. Well, we're going to run out of time. I know you need to get out of here, but this has been very enlightening. And thank you so much for coming in, Julie. Oh,
pleasure. I love it. I wish we could just fix it overnight, just, you know, with a snap and it would all be good. But it's going to take some time. But luckily, education is changing. You can learn anything you want to anywhere today. You want to be a videographer? Shoot. Fire up your computer and figure out how.
Well, and you're one of your jobs right now, Logos School, is a perfect example of looking at things from a different point of view.
And we have the luxury because we do not have union employees.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So big difference. And it's exciting to see.
So, well, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break and we'll be back with a little bit of news. So don't go away.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona says President Trump must be willing to confront Russia's Vladimir Putin during their summit Monday in Helsinki. McCain says if Trump is not prepared to hold Putin accountable, the summit should not take place. McCain's statement comes after the Justice Department announced charges Friday against 12 Russian intelligence officers accused of hacking into Democratic accounts during the 2016 presidential election. McCain says the revelations from the Justice Department added to a body of evidence that confirms a Russian plot to attack the 2016 election, sow chaos and dissension among the American electorate, and undermine faith in our democracy. The Kremlin has denied that the Russian state interfered in the U.S. election. On Wall Street, the Dow by 95 points, the NASDAQ rose 4, the S&P advanced 3. More details at srnnews.com.
Radio without all that junk. You're listening to 94.3 The Bridge.
Oh, I wish there was a way to find out what events are going on in Rogue River.
There is.
There is?
Yeah, the website for 94.3 The Bridge.
They have Rogue River events on their website?
Yeah, for Gold Hill, Weimar, and Grants Pass, too. You can even submit your own event for everyone in town to see. And if it's on the website, they automatically talk about it on the radio, too.
That's awesome. What's the address to this site?
It's 943thebridge.com.
N-I-N.
No. Just type the numbers. 943thebridge.com.
Oh, 943thebridge.com. Hey, look, they have the latest local news on there, too.
They have everything on there. 943thebridge.com.
My savings are gone.
Okay, where were they last?
Here, right before I spent them on that vacation to Aruba.
Weird. Not weird. Not saving now means no money later. For free ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
With the SRN News Business Brief, I'm Dennis Crowley. The Department of Justice says it is appealing the court ruling that paved the way for AT&T's merger with Time Warner. Last month, a U.S. District Judge rejected the government's argument that the phone and pay TV giant's $81 billion takeover of the Entertainment Corporation would hurt competition, limit choices, and raise prices for consumers to stream TV and movies. Delta Airlines officials say they are optimistic they can raise prices high enough to cover a fuel bill that could be $2 billion more this year than last year. Airline officials are saying that strong travel demand and higher average fares fully covered a run-up in fuel prices late last year. And on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 224 points with business. I'm Dennis Crowley.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk, and I want to give another thank you to Julie Niles Fry for coming in today. I got her on really short notice today, and I want to give her my extreme appreciation for getting in on short notice, but it's really an interesting subject. I don't know if you kind of got from the tenor of that discussion. We're not, either one of us, are super optimistic about the public school system right now. It's not that we don't think it can be fixed. It's that there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And I'll go back to what I said at the beginning. It's just a dysfunctional system. And it doesn't mean any one of the groups involved are not, that don't have their heart in the right place. They're not bad people. None of them are. But they're not always pulling in the same direction and some of that is okay. I mean, some of that, any employee union should be looking out for their employees. There's nothing wrong with that. But unfortunately, it creates a situation where not everybody's necessarily pulling in the same direction. And as we've seen, it can get out of hand. It can result in teacher strikes. It can result in all kinds of problems. Again, we talked about teachers being moved around because they don't have the ability to remove them from the system, so they move them around, and that's just not the right way to handle things. And the union has a big part to do with that. And again, I'm not faulting the teachers, even if a specific teacher is a union rep. They have, as Julie said, they have the right to be represented. They have the right to be treated fairly. None of that. We're not making any judgments on any one of these groups. The school board that Julie served on, it got pretty rough for a while when they wanted to close down the Weimer school. There was a lot of contention. And I remember that. I hadn't lived here that long at the time, and I went to a couple of the meetings to see what this conversation was all about. And it got very contentious, not just between the community and the board, but between individual board members. So there's just so many working parts to the public school system, and they just don't always mesh together well. And it's a big problem. But you know what? We've got these the same way that the states are little experiments. In each state, they do some things a little differently, and they're kind of an experiment for the whole nation to observe. The school system is starting to find some avenues where they can experiment a little bit. Hunter, my intern for the summer, is here. He's here through the College Dreams program, and I can't get into what that's all about today, but it's some people pulling themselves outside of the school system, but doing things in the school system. I don't know another way to explain that, but it's a kind of a new, it's a new thing. I mean, it's been around for a while, but it's allowing us to do things outside of the restraints of the school system, but that still benefit the school system, if that makes sense. And so he's here because of that program. We have, Julie works for the Logos Charter School, public charter school. And as she mentioned, their employees are not unionized, which frees them up. Now, of course, we hear from the unions, that means they're taking advantage of their employees. No, we have plenty of labor laws in this country. We don't need the extra regulations of a union adding their layer of regulations or laws per se. We have plenty of labor laws. We have plenty of people looking out for employees, no matter what business they're in, whether it's in education or landscaping or radio, whatever it happens to be. So that I dismiss that argument that, we need the union. The other idea that you're the only one that can do the job. Well, that's not true. I've learned that in my own life. As soon as your head gets so big that you think you're the only one that can do the job, there's 10 other people coming in to take your job, and they're better at it than you are. So that's another misnomer. But that project, that experiment of the charter school, another way that we can explore some avenues that we're not able to do within the structure of the regular public school system. So I don't think there's no hope. I think there's plenty of hope, but there's a lot of significant changes that need to come around. And maybe these little experiments, these new things that we're doing, maybe some of them that are working really well, we can incorporate them more and more and get those into the system and make it work a little bit better. So that's where we're at on that. That's going to be all I've got to say about that today. So let's take a look at some of the news going around. Of course, earlier in the week, we had a great resolution to a very concerning, very scary story out of Thailand, where a soccer team and their coach had gone into a cave, and I guess the water came up and trapped them in this cave, and it was a difficult situation. It took days and days of making a plan to get them out. And in fact, a former Navy SEAL from a Thai Navy SEAL, he was from the Thailand military, was killed in one of the dive missions that they were trying to find the best way to get these kids and their coach out of this cave, and he was killed. And I mean, he's a hero. It's an amazing thing that, he was a retired, Navy SEAL from Thailand, and he decided to go help out, and unfortunately he was killed. So this was a real serious situation, but all of these kids were saved. The coach was saved. I haven't heard any of the latest. I know they were all taken to hospitals and, you know, they had some recovering to do. They were very dehydrated and hungry. But it was just a scary thing. But at least so far, with the exception again of that Navy SEAL that was lost, the outcome was very positive, and it was a feel good story. Scary situation, but you know, we're glad that the kids are okay, and we pray for the family of that Navy SEAL that they'll know that he was a hero in trying to, you know, bring some resolution to that situation. So a couple other things going on in the news. Of course, if you watch any news at all, you can't miss the hearings going on in Congress, and they've been grilling this FBI agent, among others, this Peter Strzok. The one thing I've taken away from this, I mean, this could end up being one of the biggest scandals we've ever had in this country, because it's looking more and more like there was a concerted effort to not only spy on a political campaign, but to try and cover it up, to try and have a plan to keep that, you know, that candidate from becoming the president, which was unsuccessful. If things turn out the way they're looking right now, this would be a scandal that's way, way bigger than Watergate. It's scary stuff that now, again, we don't have all the facts yet, but the more and more that's coming out about this story, and you're not hearing a lot of it in the mainstream media, I would encourage you to seek out some other information. One of the best people on this story for the last several months has been Dan Bongino. He has a podcast. Look up that podcast. You can look up his website. He's been all over this story. This could turn out to be one of the biggest scandals ever in this country. I mean, it's scary the way that that potentially the federal government was used in a against American citizens. I mean, it's really scary stuff. But the testimony has been very contentious, a lot of interruptions, unfortunately, by the Democrat members, because I think they know they've got something to hide. They've got something to be embarrassed about. There's some bad stuff went on here, and I'm curious to see how it all shakes out. But that story's been in the news, and of course, you can't escape all of the talk about the Supreme Court. Of course, Justice Kennedy, who was often a swing vote, he was more originalist on certain issues, but when it came to social justice type issues, he was a little more activist judge. So he was always a swing vote. He's retiring. And man, you can't imagine the things you're hearing about the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh. And it's coming from both sides. I mean, you got some crazy right wingers that, oh, he's not going to get rid of Roe versus Wade. You know, he's just not going to do it. Well, the goal of appointing a justice is not to get rid of some case that you don't like. I happen to think that the legal part of Roe versus Wade was completely wrong. I think that was judged on improperly, but that has nothing to do with abortion. I have views on abortion, but my views on abortion have nothing to do with the fact that their use of the 14th Amendment in that case, I think, was completely off base. But again, you've got these people saying, you know, if he's not going to overturn Roe versus Wade, we don't want him. Well, that's a ridiculous way. We don't appoint people in that respect. But then from the other side, you've got ones that are saying, oh, well, he's just there to protect the president because he said that a president can't be prosecuted. And they're taking that completely out of context. There were some remarks that he made that were published in the Minnesota Law Review. He offered no legal conclusions in those remarks. What he did say was he thought maybe Congress should pass a law that would defer prosecution of a president. And part of the reason he said that was that if a president did something so heinous that he could be prosecuted, the Congress should be getting in session and should be getting him out. You know, he should be going through the hearings and to be impeached. And then the Senate would remove him from office. If he did something so bad, they should be able to get together on that. So that's all he was saying in that, and it's been mischaracterized. But we are out of time, so everybody be good to one another, because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith, Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice.
94.3 The Bridge.
Or on demand at 943thebridge.com.